Welcome to the Nonfiction Podcast. I'm Matt Pusateri. First off, just a quick request. If you're enjoying this podcast, please do me a huge favor. Rate and review it on iTunes. I know every podcast asks this, but it really does make a difference. It helps people to discover the show. It helps people that are interested in this kind of content find it. So please, if you can, take a minute and review the show. This week, we're going to talk about My Son's Mystery Medical Condition and Our Family's Brave New World, written by Taylor Harris for Narratively. Taylor Harris is a writer and a stay-at-home mom who lives in Charlottesville, Virginia. Her work has been featured in The Washington Post, McSweeney's, The Toast, Babel, and other publications. I should also add that I know Taylor Harris personally. We were colleagues together at Johns Hopkins University's graduate program for nonfiction, and I have tremendous respect for Taylor. She's one of the most gifted writers I've met. She writes some of the funniest stuff I've read. She writes some of the most moving stuff I've read. And she often finds the amazing way to balance those things in the same piece. So I'm really excited to talk about the story and to talk with Taylor for this episode. This story is a very personal one, and it's about her son and how she and her husband have been struggling to understand some of the mysterious medical conditions that he has. Here's a brief excerpt from the story. My husband Paul and I had taken Toast to the doctor for all his well baby visits and weight checks. Toast's regular pediatrician had carefully noted his slow growth and encouraged us to feed him more avocados and butter, but we never felt alarmed. After all, we joked, he had the head circumference of an astronaut. This appointment was different, though. No small talk or smiles. The doctor's face a steady portrait of concern. When the nurse drew his blood, Tove sat, shoulders hunched, and stared straight ahead. Not even a whimper. Later, she'd tell me how much his silence scared her. At home, Tove lay in heavy slumber again, the back of his neck and the crook of my elbow, when the pediatrician called. Mrs. Harris, we got your son's blood work back, and the results are concerning. I'm not even sure they're accurate. I want you to take him to the ER now. She had also called Paul at work, and he was running up the ramp towards our apartment when I stepped outside with Toast and our 3-year-old daughter Ellie. We drove just 5 minutes to the University of Virginia Medical Center in Charlottesville and found medical staff waiting for us at the front. So if you haven't already read this story, the link to the article is in the show notes and on the podcast website at nonfictionpodcast.com. I really encourage you to read it. Go ahead, pause the show, come back when you've read it. Otherwise, as always, consider yourself warned. We will be discussing the story and the ending, and that'll likely spoil some of the details. Now, without further delay, here's my interview with Taylor Harris. I'm talking with Taylor Harris. She's the author of My Son's Mystery Medical Condition and Our Family's Brave New World. Taylor, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Matt.
All right, Taylor. So this is a very different kind of story than the ones that we've covered in the first 9 episodes of the podcast. I mean, most of the stories there have been a little more journalistic with writers going out and reporting a story or researching and interviewing people. And your story is a lot more personal. It's a lot more about your own life and your family. It talks about your experience trying to figure out what's going on with your son's health and how you're reacting to that. And I guess let me start with the question, you know, what made you decide to share this experience in a story?
Sure. I'll start out by saying that, you know, this had been going on. Christopher, whom we call Toast, just turned 4 this week. And so this has been going on for a while, right? These sort of medical issues. I think he went to the ER the first time with a hypoglycemic episode when he was just before he turned 2. And so sort of for a couple of years now, we've been dealing with this. And especially the last maybe year and a half or so, it was pretty trying and tiring. I was shuttling him back and forth to different appointments and therapy sessions. And I remember trying to write about this, even just like just going to a coffee shop and pulling out my laptop and just writing some notes about what was going on. And I remember writing for maybe like 45 minutes or an hour and feeling really accomplished. Like, you know, it's good to get some things down on paper, and leaving the coffee shop and like just feeling completely depressed, like a cloud kind of rolled in. And I sort of figured at that time, you know, maybe this is a little too close to home and I'm not quite ready to write about it. And at that point, I gave myself permission to just not write about it, just to be his mom and to take him to these appointments and to really cope and to get through it however we could. And so I did have that time period of not writing. And then more recently, we got the results of that huge genetic test. Let's see, November 30th was when I got the call of 2015. And so I sort of felt, that's not like an ending to the story, but it was sort of a marker. And I felt more ready at that moment to try to put these pieces together and share it with whoever wanted to read it. And I think it was also helpful for me and for my husband to sort of have a record of what we'd been dealing with. We had these like stacks of papers and online medical records. And so it was helpful for us too, I think, to sift through everything and to look at what might be important to capture in an essay.
And how do you go about putting that together? I mean, you talked about having lots of records and stuff. I mean, normally when people are writing about other people's stories, you know, they're out there collecting research and interviews and all this stuff, but you're really looking at your own history and your own family experience. Like, how do you research yourself for this, or at least figure out what are the pieces you're going to try to use for the story?
Yeah. So with me, it's a lot of start and stop. I mean, part of that, right, is just because life is going and I'm a stay-at-home mom. And so I have to start and stop and get out to a coffee shop or wherever when I can. But part of it is that when I'm looking at my own story, our own history, it can be pretty emotional. And so I had these printouts of his assessments from the developmental pediatrician, speech pathologist, occupational therapist. So I had printouts that were really helpful because they were in the doctor's and the specialist's own words. And so I read through all of those. And then we just have so many online medical records that I used those more as a way to create a timeline so that I could sort of check my own memory and say, hey, I think this is when we went to the ER, or I think this is when we got these results, so let me go on and check and see. And so that was helpful, but I think also what happens is that as you're sort of plotting these big points and sort of as a writer, you're thinking in your head, okay, maybe this could be a good scene and maybe this is more like summary background information. I had to like stop and allow myself to feel the emotion of what I was reading. And I didn't always anticipate it. So I'd go, there's a Starbucks here that I usually go to, sit at the table, and I'm pulling out these papers and reading them. And I'm thinking that I'm reading them just for information to sort of clarify my own memory and help structure the essay. And then I realized like, man, this is my son and we've been through a lot and you know, certainly not the worst situation out there by any means, but it's a situation that's hard to describe to other people. So I don't think it's something that I really talked to a lot of people about, or if I did, I just sort of said, you know, yeah, we're still not sure what's going on with Coast, but hopefully we'll figure out soon. And so putting those pieces together was sort of this very like research factual part and also like a highly emotional part.
So when you were, you know, thinking about the story and starting to piece it together, did you have concerns about writing about your son, knowing that someday he's going to read this, you know, or did you have concerns about, mm-hmm. Was there issues between you and your husband about writing about this and writing about, you know, these kind of personal experiences that you're kind of putting down on paper?
Well, Paul, my husband, has been really good about sort of being like that sounding board for me. So I tried to like get everything written out first and then show it to him. And I do use him sort of as that person to say, hey, you know, like maybe that's a little too personal, or maybe that's not helpful, or maybe that doesn't need to be shared. And actually with this story, I don't think he pointed out anything like that, which was reassuring to me that maybe I hadn't like put too much of our personal lives out there, or at least I didn't put anything out there that didn't have meaning. And so I did think a lot about whether or not this was my story to share. Like, is this Toph's story to grow up and share if he wants to, and in whatever way he wants to. I do think, though, you know, when I decide whether or not to write, I've written a little bit about my daughter too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that it's my job to just like journal my life and put every day out there, put like arguments or difficult moments, all our difficult moments out there for people to read. But I thought that this one was important. And I always ask the question, like, is there grace in this story? Is there some sort of redemption? I didn't want to just write something that was completely bleak or didn't seem to have purpose. And I thought this story did. And maybe it also came from some of my own desire as a mom when he was sick. I mean, and he still has some complications, but sort of in the midst of some of those crisis moments where we really weren't sure what was going on. And I was worried that, we might end up back in the hospital or something scary might happen. I was really looking for community. And so I always try to think, like, you know, would I want to look for a piece like this online? And would it help me feel like I have a community, even if the people don't live in Charlottesville? And in post case, right, like, I don't know if there's any kid in the world like him. But I think there are some sort of like threads of this story that people can grab onto. And so I wouldn't say that choosing to write it, like, it might have been a bit selfish too, but hopefully it was helpful for someone else too.
Tell me about how you actually started writing this once you kind of got these pieces together. Like, where did you begin to sort of give the story some shape and some structure?
Part of that was I was pitching to the site, to Narratively. And originally it was going under this sort of theme called My Life Changed That Day. And so originally the pitch that I put in was more about the day of getting those genetic test results back. And I actually found out some other information that will sort of like greatly impact me and my medical care that I plan to somehow write about one day and share. But so in the process of leading up to that, I was talking with an editor from Narratively, and I had explained sort of, you know, this background with Christopher and why we even got these test results in the first place. And he sort of stopped and said, hey, like, I don't mean to be sound like insensitive or anything, because I know that you've gotten some test results back too that will affect you. But he's like, I think the story here, at least for us, is really about your son and what it means to mother a child that that has all these unknowns. And so that sort of changed right there the shape of things, because I was no longer focusing on this one day, and I was sort of required in a short amount of time, a short number of words, to give a great history. And so the one thing I sort of knew was that I wanted to start with the was sort of what started this whole thing for us, where we really said, okay, something's up. And that was the day that his blood sugar was like at a 27 and the trip to the ER. And I knew that that the story would end up somewhere near those genetic test results, because that's really what cemented this idea of, okay, they're looking at 20,000 genes and can't figure out what's wrong with you. What's going on with your son. And so I knew that had to come near the ending. And so I sort of wanted to follow, you know, like sort of a chronological order, right, to help keep track of these medical incidents. And along the line, just sort of fill in some backstory. And then I thought it was really important to also show who he is, because he's not just this, I mean, no kid is really just their medical history, but he's right. Like a really funny, like really quirky and awesome kid. And so I had to figure out a way to show that. And I thought that sharing the time that he ordered leather handbags off Amazon without me knowing might be a good example.
Right. I love that there's these little interspersed bits about what he's like. And I think that really came through in the story that you're talking a lot about your experience and your reactions and your concerns about this, but we also get little glimpses of him throughout the story that kind of give it some vitality.
Yeah, I mean, he's a funny dude. He just had his 4-year-old visitor checkup yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
The doctor's asking him, we love his pediatrician, but he's asking him all these questions, like his favorite color, and like all these questions that thankfully I know he knows the answers to. He's been working hard in school. He has a great teacher, and so there's a lot that I could actually say now. And yeah, he can do that. He can draw a circle. He can tell you his colors, but like he's just like whatever. He's looking at her and smiling, and he doesn't care about that test. And so at one point, she like sits down to type up these notes, and he starts quoting. I don't know if you've seen the movie Home.
Yeah.
So my kids are obsessed with Home right now, and. And she sits down and he just starts quoting Home to her. And she's like, huh? Like, what are you saying? And he's like quoting like one of the scenes where like Chip and O are talking. And he's like,
right.
You don't leave your friends. You don't leave your family. We were never friends. And the doctor's like, what's going on? And so like, I think if you keep only people like really close to him, get to see that part, and I wanted to show a
bit of
that.
Yeah. Well, I'm with Tosa on that. That movie made me cry. There's nothing wrong with that movie. but that is funny. So he didn't want to answer the questions that he's being asked, but he had stuff to share.
Yeah. I mean, and he also had this, because it had just been his birthday, he's really into numbers and letters, and so I got him these numbers that they're like number transformers. And so we had one of those with him, which I thought was like good to ease the anxiety of going to the doctor, but it also just allowed him to completely ignore anything she was saying.
Let me ask you this about the story. I mean, I think obviously this is a very personal story about, you know, some unique things going on that you were dealing with. But in some ways it struck me as a parent that it's also kind of a universal story, and that maybe not to the same degree that you've been dealing with some of these questions. I think all parents have to deal with like the unknown with their kids. Why is my kid doing this? Why is my kid not doing that? You know, I know my wife and I have had times where we're, you know, stressed or worried about a particular thing. And I think your story touches on that in some ways. Was that something you were thinking about as you were writing it? Or is that just sort of a sort of side effect of the fact that the story is just talking about your experience?
I don't know if the answer is both, but I'll tell you, I guess what I was thinking when I wrote it was, yes, specifically his Toast story, but also, yeah, I wanted it to have universal meaning. And also, having two kids right now, a question I often ask is like, because we've had those questions about my daughter, who's older, like you said, you know, like I've talked with Paul about, like, what are we seeing here? My daughter is super quiet, and I actually had written a story about her last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're sort of looking at, you know, certainly an introverted child, and what does that mean, and how to parent, and is it anything else besides introversion going on that we need to look more carefully at? And so I know that as a parent, I tend to feel like, man, like I have these two kids with different challenges, and I'm not sure how to handle that. And I start thinking, like, wait, so does that mean all parents, you know, whether they have one or two or 10 kids, like, are they also constantly juggling and trying to figure out what's going on with their kids? And I feel like the answer is, to some extent, yeah.
Right.
You know, like, maybe there's, like, an ebb and flow to things, like, hopefully not all your kids are, you know, in crisis at one time. But the more I talk to friends, you know, I think we all handle it in different ways,
mm-hmm.
but... Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think people can relate
right.
to this unknown. I think Christopher was just super pronounced. I mean, the fact that he has the phrase variant of unknown significance on his test result, you know, that was just sort of like an easy stamp
right.
To point out, like, okay, yeah, this guy definitely is like a mystery. Also, I'll add that at his checkup yesterday, something his doctor said, which I thought was funny. I hadn't even brought up anything. I don't think she's read the piece. But she said, yeah, he's a mystery wrapped in a riddle wrapped in enigma. I thought, wow. And so I think, like, that it's funny because it also sort of applies to my daughter just in very right. different ways.
You should just get t-shirts made, right? Like, that's such a great description.
And, like, it made me think of, like, a burrito, you know?
Like a right, right. So let's talk a little bit about, as you're writing this thing, it sounds like, you know, we talked a little bit about collecting the stuff and sorting out the history and then getting it together and kind of getting it in sort of a chronological order. What kind of decisions did you have to make when you were wrapping it up? Were there things that you struggled with about things to include, not to include, things you felt like you had to cut? Any decisions like that that were challenges as you were, you know, finalizing this with your editor?
You know, I thought there were a couple of editors. I worked with that narratively. One was like a features editor who did most of the work with me. And then another editor at the very end kind of took one last look at it. And I thought both were really, really helpful with kind of pointing out things that maybe weren't as significant as I thought they might be. And then also digging a little bit. And you know, when you get used to your own history, it kind of seems like second nature. And so there were things where they would stop and say, wait, what happened here? Like, what's going on? And so it was really helpful to, like, and they didn't always agree. You know, like, one editor might have me, like, go a little bit deeper into Christopher's birth scene and what happened there and, like, the time that his foot turned blue when we were out and he was just an infant. And another editor, I think he came back and cut some of that. Which was fine with me. And I think the biggest change came with the ending. I had cut it off a little bit sooner because I think as, like, a writer, you're always, you know, I feel like we learn, like, in grad school and stuff, you're just sort of like, don't make it too mushy, whatever you do. And I had promised the editor, like, I said in one email, we went back and forth a lot, and I said, you know, like, he's an amazing kid, but I promise you I won't make this, like, super, you know, sappy story. And so I had cut it off with this sort of, like, I don't know, ambiguous ending. And he actually came back and said, hey, can you add, like, another line or two? And I think when he pushed me to do that and I had to think of a way to add it and hopefully make it, like, like I said, sort of like this moment of grace in the midst of a complicated story. I ended up being happy with the ending, and I think he was absolutely right to push me on that. And so there were just things along the way like that, like, so pushing on the ending and then also pushing on sort of like medical terms, like when I mentioned the issue with Christopher's carnitine level. And they pushed back and said, okay, well, what is carnitine? And what did you read on the internet that made you so frightened? And so going back and saying, hey, that's right, like, these readers aren't in my head. What did I read? What did I Google that day and find? And so, like, as much as I, you know, having an editor look at my stuff and just feedback can be, like, completely, you know, like an anxiety-filled process. And so it just reminded me how necessary it is. You know, I feel like years away from those grad school workshops we had where you get constant feedback, and they were super helpful and just made me remember, like, that second set of eyes.
Right. It helps to get someone outside your head to, like, look at the words and the paragraphs and see if they all work together the way you think they do or they think they should. I thought your ending was amazing. I thought it wasn't sappy. I thought it was kind of perfect. I was going to read this last paragraph because it really struck me. And it says, sometimes I catch him in just the right second of fading anger, or just the right spot between his ribs. His heavy eyebrows will lift and he'll give into a laugh, that great dimple piercing his left cheek as I tickle him until neither of us can take it anymore. His laugh, much like his dancing and his funny sayings, has yet to melt away the unknown. In fact, it refuses to be concerned with the lowering enzyme levels or raising blood sugar. And in those moments, so do I. I love that ending because I think it doesn't tie up the story in a bow, right? Like, it's not like you found out a miracle solution or some answer that clears everything up for you guys, that gives you guys complete sense of reassurance that everything's perfect. But it also gives the sense that to some degree, you're coming to terms with this idea of there's a lot you don't know and still can't quite figure out, but you also have to cherish these moments for what they are and not let that overcome you. I thought that was beautiful. And I think that's something, again, that very universal to a lot of parents, that, you know, it's so easy for us to get caught up into worries or concerns about our kids. And it's a lot harder sometimes to just set that aside and just take little moments for what they are.
Yeah. And when I look at Hope in particular, you know, like he's four now, and the time is passing, and, you know, with him, like, I wouldn't be surprised if at 8 and 12 and 15, like, we still don't have those answers. But like you said, like, I just, same with, I'm sure, a lot of other parents, like, I just don't want to miss those moments that are so uniquely him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I hope that those are things that they're not all recorded the same way like his medical records are. I guess we have pictures and some videos. Those are things that I definitely don't want to lose. And want to find ways also, like, even as we have IEP meetings and things and talk about goals and what he struggles with, like, I want to, you know, like, praise him and reinforce, you know, like, the amazing things that he does, like the way that he will jump on the iPad and figure out things that I never could. I mean, he was one, I think he was two maybe. And I'm like, you know, I'm just like a Luddite, like, whatever. I don't know how to do anything but like Microsoft Word. And he showed me how to take a screenshot on my phone. those are things that I want to like remember and be able to like talk to him about and share with him about in the future.
So this story came out in the start of May. Tell me about the reaction you got from people. What kind of responses do you get to this once it was published?
So, like, you always fear the worst, right? So I was like, sure, like, like, some mother out there in, like, I don't know, like, Idaho or somebody, like, would read it and be like, you know, like, you're totally putting your kid out there. You're like a bad mom. This is too personal. And I'm sure like somebody said that, but I didn't really get those responses. And I got really just amazing support from people. And I found that like what was helpful was, for one, like hearing other people say, you know, thanks for writing this. We're in the midst of something similar, you know, like our case doesn't look exactly like Christopher's, but we're in the hospital now for 3 days of testing. Like, we're living in that very unknown spot. And thanks for writing this. And so those responses are always really encouraging and also, you know, helps me to kind of look past my own life a little bit at what other people are experiencing. But then also I felt what was really helpful was, like I mentioned before, you don't want to, like, there's no way to explain what you've been through, like, this really complicated journey. You can't, like, explain that to another parent on the playground. And it's even hard to do, like, give that information to teachers in a conference. And so it felt really good that people who know us and even know us well could read this and say, oh, okay, so now I have a better idea, you know, of everything that you guys have been going through and have been trying to figure out. Because the thing with Christopher, because he's so, like, active and funny and cute, like, a lot of people would look at him and be like, I don't get it. Like, what's wrong? He's small, but a lot of kids are short and grow up out of it. And so it was really hard to explain to people. You know, I would say things like, yeah, sometimes it's just hard to get for me to communicate well with him or things like that. And so I felt like this gave just a good explanation around toast. And so now, like, conversations can build on that. And I feel like it's okay that when people see him and they've read the story, I feel like it's okay for them to make that connection, and that if anything, it might help them relate better to him.
How about friends and family? I think, did you get reactions from people that, I mean, you and I were in school together and we've sort of stayed in touch after that. I had no clue about any of this going on. And you know, I was not surprised that it obviously isn't the kind of thing that you're going to put on in detail on Facebook or something. But, you know, did you get a lot of reactions from people that you know, you know, but maybe didn't know the details of some of this?
Yeah, I did. So some from family members who were just who did kind of know a lot of what was going on, but maybe didn't know all of the ins and outs. And, you know, I got an email from my mom sort of giving me her reaction, which is, you know, obviously positive and I'm sure somewhat painful as a grandmother to sort of go back through those experiences. And I got a really important email from an instructor from Hopkins that you and I both had, and that meant a lot because she's got a son who is, you know, also about 4 or 5 by now. And just sort of her reaction of like, just anyway, she's got books published, you know, she's sort of like a big time, a big timer. So to know that without me, like even sending her the link, that she took the time to read it and to respond, meant a lot. And that she followed so closely to the story, which I guess is what makes you like a great writing professor. So she, at one point she said, you know, she was reading it and it was the point where I sort of asked Paul, like, do you think he has this syndrome, this Russell Silver syndrome? And he says, you know, he might, yeah. You know, some of the symptoms match. And even if he doesn't, we know that he'll need intervention. And so she said when she read that part about Paul, she said, oh, no, like, not this strong parent. Like, he's humbling you. Right. And so it was just the fact that we could share in that moment that was so important. And another writing instructor we both had, you know, he shared it on Facebook, and he won't just share anything, like some of my goofier pieces he won't touch. So to know that he shared this one has been a lot. And then another friend that I met in grad school, you know, who has a similar situation, you know, has a daughter where they've had to have several, you know, IMD meetings, doctor's visits, specialist visits, all of that. Wrote me. And it sometimes, like, it doesn't have to be a long email. It's just like, man, I read this 3 times. You know, I'm here with you. I feel you. And sometimes that means a lot too, you know?
So I guess my last question is just, you know, how do you feel about this piece now that it's done? Like, when, you know, a lot of times people, when you're in the middle of writing something, when you're putting it together, you know, you're kind of in the work of it all. Like, now when you read it or when you think about it, I guess, how do you feel about it as a finished story about this part of your life and your son's life?
Well, if people know me, they know that I'm like always second guessing myself. So I feel like I can say this, that I feel really good about it. And that's not like, I don't go around like saying that. But this piece and a piece again that I mentioned earlier that I wrote about my daughter about a year ago and some of the challenges we've had with her, they're sort of like the two pieces that I really stand by. And not in the sense that they're perfect, not in the sense that, you know, I would be open to people saying, you know, maybe you did share too much. And that's something that I'll have to, well, that I sort of always contend with in my own mind and that I might have to talk to my kids about in the future. But for right now, they feel like just solid pieces. And they feel like, you know, that I was able to take these, you know, these true events and also sort of make them art a little bit. The one thing, I don't know if you've ever gotten this as a writer, but like the one thing that is both encouraging and kind of makes me cringe is when people are like, you know, you're so honest, you know, and you're so brave for sharing. Thanks for sharing. And I don't know if they mean it like, you know, thanks for showing us your journal. Because, you know, as a writer, you've put so much time and effort into like, no, this is literary. Like, right. Let me show you there are layers here. and I never want it to come across as just like a diary entry. Right. You know, I think I sort of understand what they're saying. And so this piece is one of those pieces that I really stand by. And yeah, 10 years down the line, I'll look at it and be like, yeah, there's a lot I could have done better. But for right now, I'm really, really happy with it. And it's one of those things where, like, I hope I can write. Not that I want more catastrophes or challenges to come our way, but I hope I'm able to do it again in the future, to take something like this and write it and work hard and make changes. And then at the end, be pretty pleased with it.
Well, I think you should be really pleased with it, because I think it was a beautiful story. And I think one that really connects with a lot of experiences that parents have. So thanks for writing it. I think it was great. And I hope more people check it out. And Taylor, thanks again for coming on the show. It was really great to talk to you.
Thanks, Matt. It's good to see you. to the docu-series. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much again to Taylor Harris for coming on the show. Just a final few thoughts about this episode and this story that Taylor wrote. I think as a parent, and I have two daughters, they're 8 and 6, we all deal with fear and uncertainty and concerns about our children. And I think that's what struck me about this piece more than anything else, is that it deals with obviously somewhat about a more serious and extreme situation in many respects, but also one that I think most parents can relate to in one degree or another. And Taylor touches on a really difficult thing for all parents to deal with, is that sometimes we have to accept that we don't know what's going to happen with our kids, and we don't know what exactly is going on with them. And part of being a parent is learning how to accept that and work through that. So on one hand, it's a very personal and revealing story about what's going on with her and her family, but it also really speaks to what it means to be a parent in general. Another thing I really liked about this story is that it doesn't have a very satisfying ending in the sense that, they figured out it was this condition and we'll give Tofs some pills and he'll be fine. It is a very open-ended story in that Tofs' story is still being written and a lot of the answers that Taylor and her husband are looking for are still being figured out. So in that respect, I think this is a very brave article to write, not in that she was willing to share something personal. Taylor shares personal stuff in a beautiful way in much of her writing. But I think this is the middle part of the story. And to put that out there and share that with the world and share the fact that she's still grappling with these difficult questions and these difficult challenges for a parent, I think was really bold for Taylor and makes for a really important story. Next week, we'll be talking with Danielle Bacher about her story for Esquire magazine, My Autistic Brother's Quest for Love. So we're going to keep the focus on family next week as well. Please check out that article. It's a great read. I encourage you to check it out before next week. Until then, this is Matt Puzateri, and thanks so much, as always, for listening to the Nonfiction Podcast. I'm so bad. I hate the sound of my voice. I don't even know why I started a podcast when I hate hearing myself talk this much.
Anyway. Me too. Okay.